Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to ATI on DOT Compliance on Wednesday. It is not noon Central Time. We're a little bit early. We had to try to get in this show to accommodate schedules. So thank you so much if you're here and you made it early. And I forgot to announce that last night, too. So that's okay. But anyways, you can click share, click copy, grab this YouTube link. And what we're doing here is DOT Compliance, IFTA, Authority. I know there's a lot of places to get advice, but here's the good news. We have Brian Riker, your DOT guy. He is an expert and a consultant, advisor, and he'll clarify some of those words, because when you get to that level, you got to be careful that when you're giving advice, it's friendly advice. You can hire him, you can talk to his company, but he is here to help. And he speaks, he's got a tow show coming up he's going to be talking about as well. So please do jump in the live chat. Oh, look at that live chat going crazy. Or if you missed the show live, you can put it in the YouTube comments below. He's also got a podcast he'll be talking about as well. So let's bring Brian up in here. Brian, can you see me and hear me okay?
Yes, I can, Jay. Good morning.
Hey, what's happening? Yeah. So where are you? What's going on with you?
I am in Orlando, Florida, more specifically Lake Buena Vista at Disney Springs Resort. We have the Florida Tow Show, which kicks off the trade show season for the towing industry, fresh off of a auto recycling show in New Orleans last week, which is why we couldn't be live last week, and you were doing a show anyhow. But I am getting ready to park and shine up and sell a couple of tow trucks. Yes, we actually have a truck or two for sale in this market. So I'm enjoying the sun. I escaped the snow and ice that came just north of my house, Syracuse, New York. Got 14 inches the Monday into Tuesday. It was crazy.
We actually, up here in Kansas City, we're having, you know, kind of wet, rainy April showers, I guess, right? So it's normal, but it feels like, you know, I'm ready. I'm ready for some warmer weather. I'm ready for some Florida weather.
I'm standing outside in 79 degree weather with a light breeze and partly cloudy skies. It is beautiful.
This is pretty cool. So, man, I didn't even announce it, but you guys are making it. Douglas M is here. Morning. Ty is here. Tommy Whitmore. Danny B. That's super cool. Thank you guys so much
good
for saying
that. Good deal. I'm glad we got a live audience.
Yeah, that is really good. Let's talk about equipment for a second. What is going on right now in the world of equipment, new equipment, used equipment, pricing, etc.? Tell us more.
Well, the manufacturers dropped the ball 2 years ago when COVID struck, and they canceled a lot of production, presuming nobody was going to buy anything. But car sales, truck sales, they stayed steady, if not increased. And then the parts suppliers, they had labor and other issues. And then they redirected their production when the automakers didn't order parts in the building consumer goods for the stay-at-home market. So the supply chain is completely upside down. We're looking at probably another 18 to 24 months before it comes back to normal. So manufacturers, it looks on paper like things are doing good because new orders have plateaued. That's only because your chassis makers have just stopped taking orders once they filled all their production slots. Nope, we can't take anymore for the year. So truck production is down, depending on which report you look at, anywhere from 50 to 70% over normal. So right now, you can't get a new truck. If you're just a regular Joe Blow and you want to walk into the dealer and buy a truck, it's almost impossible in most parts of the country. And so that has led to a ripple effect where used vehicles are selling for as much or more than they did new with 100, 150,000, 200,000 miles on them. So it's making it a very difficult time to get any type of equipment.
So, let me ask you this then. Is there more used equipment on the market now, or is it the same? What do you think?
Less than before, because the primary source of used equipment are large fleets when we're talking about class 6 through 8 trucks. And they are being forced to hold on to their equipment longer because even they can't get what they're used to for volume. So they're forced to hold on to the equipment longer, so they're not turning it. And they're resurrecting trucks from the deadline that should have been going to the junkyard, literally, but they're bringing them back to life because they need equipment, because there's more freight than ever to haul, except maybe cars because of the supply chain disruptions to automotive manufacturing. But in general, there's more freight to haul than ever before, and they can't get the equipment to haul it on. So they're holding their used equipment. In the towing world, we're getting a lot of people that are buying the new trucks as soon as they're available, but they're not offering us a trade-in because they're holding on to their trades right now because of the uncertainty of the market. So there's not as much equipment available in any capacity at the moment.
And how about, let's go to auto transport business owners. Do you think that more companies have gone out of business? Are more companies getting into business to replace the, what's your take on that?
Well, overall, we've seen a spike in new operating authority applications for the last several years. I think it's starting to plateau in auto transport because auto transport is a difficult market right now. But a couple of fleets I know have either consolidated or gone out of business. But I'm still processing a couple of new, and I'm only one of thousands of people that do DOT authority packages. I'm still processing a couple of new ones a week for hotshot and car haulers. So it slowed down a little bit with my customer base, but not a lot.
Do you think the market's tougher because there's less cars to move? Folks that have been in new are also in used. Why do you think that the auto transport market is tough? Because what I'm getting at is, if there's still supply and demand, fuel prices are up, but the rates on randomly posted load boards don't reflect the cost it takes to move it.
I have a couple of personal opinions on that. Yes, some of your fleets that traditionally hauled vehicles that are not available at the moment to survive have changed what they haul. So that's one component. The other component is just the wholesale change in how we do things. More vehicles are selling in the dealer back lot than going to a brick and mortar auction. So that cuts one part of the transportation out. You don't have that vehicle collector gathering up the truckload from the area dealerships and bringing them back to the auction. Sidebar of that is, a lot of these dealers are buying their lease returns immediately when they hit the ground, where they used to let them go to auction and not worry about it. Now, because the new car dealers are so desperate for used car inventory for that side of the business, they're buying things that they would have sent to auction before, or even customer trade-ins that they wouldn't normally sell. They'd wholesale at auction. They're retail selling on their lots. So that's cut it out. So we've seen a shift from gathering up whole or almost whole truckloads at dealers and bringing them to a brick and mortar auction to now going and collecting them from the dealership when they've been sold final, doing a lot of onesies, twosies to build a load and taking them to their direct to their end purchaser. So we've seen a change there. And then we've seen some people, especially the high mount crowd, say, well, freight is paying $4, $5, $6 a mile right now to pull a dry van or a reefer. I'm going to park my car hauler. I'm going to back under this reefer trailer I can rent from extra lease for $1,000 a month. And I'm going to go make as much money with a lot less exposure. So we've seen some carriers shift what their specific commodity is. And the board rates, they're just putting them out as low as they can, and there's a sucker every minute that's going to snap it up. So they have no need to raise that rate, because what makes it to the load board is the leftovers anyhow. All your good brokers have the good carriers that they prefer to deal with that they call up and offer to load before they ever even post it. So the only stuff that makes the load board is the leftovers anyhow. And so they're going to still post it at a bottom dollar and hope that somebody's desperate enough or dumb enough to take it. And we know that D is dangerous. Dumb, distracted, drug, desperate, drowsy, whatever we're looking at is dangerous. So they grab this stuff, not knowing any better, and take it. And that's why you really have to know how to negotiate and stand your ground with a broker and be okay with saying no and walking away from that load if it doesn't make sense for you.
So let's settle this debate right now. Is there anything the industry and haulers can do to raise the rates? There's been this belief, as long as I've been around, that if everybody bands together, that the rates will go up on load boards. Is that ever going to happen?
We will never band together as an industry. We are independent for a reason. And secondly, if we band together as an industry of independent business owners and start demanding certain rates, that's called collusion, and it's against federal law, and you get prosecuted like a 30s gangster for a RICO violation. So we can't even legally band together and demand something change. But the only way it's going to happen is enough independent guys just say no. Think of Nancy Reagan from 1984. Just say no. That is what we need to do to improve the market, because I agree wholeheartedly that we as truck owners control the rate, not the broker, but we have to have the intestinal fortitude to say no and wait it out. Unfortunately, there's a new guy every day that comes into this industry that has no idea what they're doing, and they watched a couple episodes of reruns of U-Ship, and they think that if they can pay for fuel at the end of the day, they're doing good, and they don't run a business. They built themselves a J-O-B, and that is the heart of the problem. It's too easy to get into this industry.
Okay, so then he goes out of business, puts his trailer for sale on Facebook. How many businesses, JOBs, are there like that in the recycle pile? That's what I'm trying to figure out.
I wish I had a number, but it's a lot of them. It really is. And I do a lot of authority transfers where the guy couldn't make it and he sells it out to somebody else. And then 6 months, 9 months later, when it comes time to renew their insurance and they didn't make enough money to even make their down payment to renew the insurance, they're looking to sell their MC number in their truck and their trailer. And it just goes over and over again.
How long do you think a business like that, again, I use business very loosely here, how long do you think that business is in business? Is it a year? Is it 2 years? How long does it take for a get-rich YouTuber, you know, hanger-on? Oh, man, I know it's brutal, but it pains me to see people getting views off of the future out of business owners.
Less than a year, Jay.
Less than a year.
Statistics will show that most motor carriers fail within the first 12 months of operating, and that's across all segments of trucking. Most motor carriers fail in the first 12 months. If they can make it to month 36, then they're likely to be around for 8 or more years. But month 0 to 12, most of them fail. Then 12 to 36, that failure rate slowly drops off. And after month 36, then they seem to be doing okay, at least till the 8 or 9 year mark. And then a lot of them just have become either unhealthy physically from the demands of the job and have walked away, or they've sold their company and made a profit and walked away.
And believe me, it is camera one. It is not lost on me that I'm live on YouTube talking about get rich quick YouTubers. The difference is I'm not a get-rich-quick YouTuber. We're dragging the garbage in the sunlight. Let me ask you this question, Brian. High Mount Crowd. Okay, so you've got, on one hand, independent contractors that parked their high mount. They're doing power only for freight. Tell me more about what that looks like. Are they still doing it? Tell me more about what you see there.
What I have seen is, yes, they're still doing it, but we're going to see a correction in the freight world really quick, because these freight rates are just not sustainable, and we're having more problems with COVID in China, and so there's going to be a disruption 2 months down the line of stuff coming into the port again, and so the amount of freight to haul is going to drop out. So these rates are not going to last. We have not found Shangri-La. We are not in the promised land. Well, these high rates are not going to last. And then I don't know what those guys are going to do. But I am seeing a lot of people hauling stuff other than cars when their primary business used to be auto transport.
So here we are. Okay, we're in April 2022. They're doing power only for freight. I'm getting that right, right? Because you're saying the freight rates, I just want to clarify, freight rates are higher than auto transport rates.
For $4 to $6 a mile for bumping a dock and having some pallets set in a trailer.
Yeah, right. Now, do you think some of those guys won't come back to auto transport? Because, man, this is, wow, this is great.
They might, although that market's going to adjust back down to its average of $2 to $2.50 a mile. But even there, auto transport rates are in the toilet for a lot of the irregular route broker board stuff. So they probably can make the same without the risk in that world. So we might see a lot of them stay over there.
So we talked about the independent contractor that does that. What about the business? What about the 20 to 40 truck business? Do they see some of their drivers and or are they as a business pursuing moving freight right now? Tell me more about what's going on with the mid-sized medium asset business.
Considering the drivers are naming their price to go to work somewhere, we've been seeing a lot of drivers jump ship and get out of the labor intensive out in all weather world of car hauling and go bump a dock, because you can go to Walmart if you've got a good clean driving record and you're not a job hopper, and you can start at $110,000 in your first year driving private freight and getting treated like a prima donna. So we're seeing. And then everyone hates the 800-pound gorilla in the room, but companies like Vroom and Carvana, contrary to what is said on social media, they pay and treat their drivers very well at most of their yards, and they're having explosive growth. So car haulers that used to bust their butt are going in hauling loads now, and I have some friends that work at several different terminals. Some of them literally climb in a preloaded truck, drive it to a meet point, hand the keys to another driver, hop in that truck, drive it back to their yard, leave it loaded, and go home for $80,000 to $90,000 a year, and they never touch a car. Now, some people want to be a car hauler because they want to haul cars and do the job. Other people, it's just an ends to a mean to get a paycheck, or a means to an end to get a paycheck, and they're perfectly happy doing that. So as employers, we're seeing employees leave, and I'll be speaking about this here at the Florida Tow Show on finding that ideal candidate to promote in your company and building a light-duty to medium-duty tow truck driver, which would be the same as promoting a driver in your trucking fleet. But we're seeing people leave the industry to be treated better for the same money in other industries, or leave industry segments because they can do less work and get paid just as well, because car haul is not a top dollar job in this world anymore. There's a lot of people that are just dock bumping idiots that are making more money than car haulers.
We're having a good discussion here. I just want to say that you please do jump in the live chat and or jump into the YouTube comments. This is good stuff, because I saw the Brian, we didn't plan on any of this, right? But
no.
We're going to keep going because this is a show. Let's see. Walmart recently announced a pay raise? What did happen?
Yeah, raise for their entry-level drivers. What happened? Walmart used to be the holy grail of freight hauling jobs. There was a waiting list to get hired there. I'll be honest. When I sold my first company in 2004, I applied at Walmart, and I was told I wasn't qualified back in 2004 because I hadn't been bumping docks and hauling freight. I had been owning tow trucks and car haulers. And then they had a change in management, and they started treating it like any other mega fleet trucking company, and they had a bunch of senior drivers leave. A lot of them left and went to work for other less than truckload trucking companies and were treated like kings. Now they realize, hey, we can't run our, because they're one of the largest fleets in the country with somewhere between 8,000 and 10,000 power units, and we can't run this efficiently with idiots. So now they raise their hiring standards again, and they're paying better for entry-level jobs. Now there's some bad news to it, because you'll be slip-seating trucks and working crazy schedules for your first couple years, but you're going to make a six-figure salary to not touch a piece of freight. So trade that off for uh, uh, trade that off for a couple of bad things. You know, you very rarely see a Walmart truck sleeping in a truck stop either. They fuel at their terminals. They sleep in their store parking lots or in hotel rooms. And so they're treated well for being an over-the-road truck driver. And this is not an ad for Walmart transportation. I am not getting paid. I'm just saying this is the reality of what is happening. My younger brother had worked for a line haul company pulling double trailers and was making almost six figures working a 4-day work week. There are jobs like that out there, and that's what makes our job less appealing now.
Well, and I did see, I just happened to run across an ad of a well-known auto transport business, and the offer was less than what Walmart is saying they'll pay for bumping docks. That's bad news.
I have a real good friend that's got about 30 trucks, and he is very well known. And he's had to change even how he buys his equipment because he can't get guys that want to drive high rail 10 and 11 car carriers. So he started buying 80-foot quick loaders, and he's actually taken delivery this week of his very first auto shift, automated transmission car hauler, because he's getting more and more applicants that have the auto trans only restriction even. So here's a guy that had a fleet of almost exclusive show quality high rail trucks, and he pays well, probably not as well as that Walmart offer, but he pays well and he treats you well. And he's had to change his entire fleet makeup just to find drivers. And I mean, come on, even look at Copart. I sent it to you last week. Copart is buying Ram 5500 and Mini 5 trailers to haul their own cars instead of buying the right Landall 5 and 7 car tractor trailers and 4 car rollbacks because that's what they can find drivers that are willing to drive.
You were talking about Carvana and Vroom, and I find that very interesting because my guess, I'm going to say something, I'm going to go ahead and lob my Molotov cocktail. My guess is that super truckers on Facebook don't really want to work for a company like Carvana or Vroom.
Not at all.
Right.
They will not, yes.
Okay. So I'm right. Okay. So other than the super trucker comment, I'm right about that. So yes. But what happens if Vroom and Carvana and companies like that continue to pay better, and then you got the Walmart stuff? What's happening? Where are we headed?
The entry-level truck driver is going to choose to work for a company like that instead of the small fleet guy in a lot of cases, because the millennial generation, they are not lazy, contrary to popular opinion, but they want to know what's in it from them from day one. And they want to see a clear path to a comfortable life with as little effort as possible. And so our replacements, as we age out, because I'm getting older, and so is a lot of folks that are currently hauling cars on the traditional 9 and 10 car high rail trailers, stuff like that, we're aging out, and our replacement, they want it easier. And so we're going to see them gravitating towards those companies that make it really easy for you. And a place like Carvana, they'll hire you to be a loader in the yard, and you learn how to load the trucks and move them around. And if you do that for a couple months, they'll send you to CDL school, and they'll make a truck driver out of you. And I've said this time and time again, if you want a really good driver, you start with someone that's not a truck driver, and you build them into a truck driver. But you have to have the money and the ability to do that type of in-house training. And that's where you find someone, and you make them loyal to your company if you do it right and you treat them right from day one.
This is fascinating. I think this is a really good conversation because it gets to the heart of what's happening to driver retention, driver shortage, etc. But at the heart of it, there's still auto transport. It's still a thing.
It's going to be a thing, but
it's changing. And again, what's interesting to me, I always really find it interesting. The lifestyle idea that you're just going to be like a Harley truck driver, lone wolf. Yeah, go ahead and run that past the DOT.
Yes, a lot of that has changed, and like it or not, our industry is evolving. And I think we talked about it a couple of years ago on your show before anyone in the industry was even talking about the change to final mile services for home delivery. And we thought we were crazy pre-COVID. Everyone thought we were, and look at what happened there. And we have major dealership chains buying one car carriers to pick up and deliver from their customers' houses. And I don't think our former model will ever come back completely. I think this is the, I hate the term, the new normal for auto transport, these less than full truckload loads.
It's interesting you say former model, because we're going to wrap this up on this topic, and then we'll talk about a couple other things, and we'll end the show. But I said I was trying to find the year that the past, you know, the granddaddy and the daddy and all that, that ended, and I came up with like 2018. Do you think that there was still traditional auto transport business in the 2010s? And that
Oh
it's
yeah,
right, but so
and
what year
I
would
think
you
you're.
give? Yeah.
I would say 2018 because it was January 18th, 2018 that I sold my last car hauler and exited operating a truck and a fleet because the industry had changed more than I was willing to adapt. So I adapted differently by going to the consulting side and the sales side and doing something different. And to wrap this all up in a nutshell, this great resignation we saw during COVID, where people realized they don't have to have a traditional 9-to-5 brick and mortar job, we're finding a lot more people that would have gravitated towards truck driving doing something different because they have the option to now. And so if we want to survive, we are going to have to do something different with our business because what we used to do just isn't there anymore.
Pretty wild stuff that it's that recent, right? Because before 2018, and I've been trying to learn more about the shift in the ICC and deregulation. Do you
That
know
was
what?
late 80s,
Okay.
1986, the ICC Sunset Act
Okay.
passed. And
86.
so the late 80s, and by then regulation had already been gutted for the most part. But yeah, early to mid 80s is when we started having a fundamental shift, and it was easy to just become a trucking company at that point. And so this has only been the last 3 decades that we've watched this industry spiral downwards as a whole, the trucking industry as a whole.
Can you weigh in? Do you think trucking was better before deregulation?
It depends. If you owned ICC rights and you were one of the fortunate ones that had a route, it was a good time to be a trucking company because you competed on service, nothing else. Your rates were even. You weren't price cutting to get a job because the rates were set by tariff. If you wanted to be a employee driver, it was a very good time to be an employee driver because you go to work for one company and retire from them 25, 30 years later and have a $1 million pension or retirement plan. And but if you're an independent entrepreneur like I am, it was an awful time to want to be in the business because it was very difficult to break into the business, which is why my father and I were doing tow trucks because that was not regulated. So it was easier to break into that. Now, that said, from a business owner point of view, the regulated market was better because it raised a barrier to entry. We opened this show with me complaining about how easy it is to get in, and that's what is driving our market into the ground. So it's a double-edged sword. We can have regulation and restriction on getting into the market, but then only a few people will actually be successful, but they'll be uber successful and the employees will do well. Or we can have a bunch of independents and it'll be a 50-50 mix of who is successful and who takes advantage of people and who wins and who loses.
Right. So freedom and entrepreneurship and the desire to be independent. Yeah, I mean, wow. So we've seen both options.
Yes. And
Maybe it's time for a hybrid. Maybe we'll hit hybrid on this thing.
whichever one is better is from your personal point of view on what you want to do, what you expect out of life, and how hard you're willing to work for what you want.
So before deregulation, we had oligarchs. And after deregulation, we have bottom feeders. And
sure.
Neither one is ideal. So because sure. That seems to me, again, the reason I brought that up is it seems like the American dream wasn't really possible before deregulation because it didn't matter if you dreamt or not. It meant if you could get a golden ticket.
We still had a lot of owner-operators. Owner-operators have always been the backbone of the trucking industry, but they just had to lease on to somebody. And we had folks that had rights in a certain area, and they would trip lease to other carriers. It was actually easier for carriers to share work with each other back then. You didn't have to be a broker and go through a broker to share work with a fellow motor carrier. You just had to have a trip lease or an interchange agreement. So there you still could have the American dream. But having your own rights and having complete freedom, no, that was very difficult pre-ICC years, or pre-ICC sunset years, I should say.
And I want to say thanks in the live chat, John Larrick and Chris Chamberlain and Devin and folks talking. I really do appreciate it. One of the reasons I wanted to bring this up is that I really get tired of, I want to go back, I want to make things back, I want to go back, and I get really tired of it. We're never going back. It's not going back. The genie is not going back in the bottle. And there's no blame game. We don't need to figure out which president screwed up everything. That's all just hogwash. It's a waste of time. Moving forward, do you have any advice based on everything we just talked about? Anything you could say to, you know, let's say you're new. Let's say you're getting in. Let's say you're researching.
Data, research, know your market. You don't learn as much from the truck stop lunch counter as you think you do. You learn from reading publications like Automotive News and Automotive Logistics and attending trade shows and work for somebody for a couple of years and really decide if you even want to do this business before you go out and spend your family fortune buying equipment and find out you absolutely hate the job or you don't have the technical skills to do the job right. Not everybody is cut out to be a truck driver. It's just the way it is. So my advice is understand your market and understand that it's changing. You don't just make a business plan today and it's the same plan for 50 years. Things evolve. Be prepared to evolve with it. And if you're on the leading edge of those trends, you'll always be ahead of the competitors.
Brian, you've got a couple things. One is that what are you doing this weekend? What's going on?
In Florida here, Hilton Orlando, Lake Buena Vista at Disney Springs, we have the Florida Tow Show. Come on in. There's no charge to come to these presentations. And I am speaking in the Allstate Motor Club, the Allstate Insurance booth, on Friday and Saturday about identifying and promoting operators from a light duty tow truck that might have the makings of a medium or a heavy duty operator. And it's a great way for you to maybe even decide if you have what it takes to be a truck driver, period. So I'm speaking there and I'll be wandering around the show learning. There is some equipment on the show floor for sale and it's Orlando, Florida. It's beautiful weather in April. So that's what I am doing this weekend. And then we have a couple other towing industry trade shows throughout the year. And just announced, I'm a founding member of the Independent Automobile Transporters Alliance, IATA, and we are going to have a members meet and greet. So come on out and learn who we are, learn what we can do for you, because there's power in association, and there's purchasing power, there's discounts on tires and everything else that we can offer, but there's also camaraderie. You get to get that inside information from somebody that might not share it with you otherwise by talking to your friends at these events. Well, we're having a meet and greet outside of Mannheim, Pennsylvania in the end of August, and we'll have more links up on it, but it's been confirmed it is happening, and come meet the IATA crew and see what the trade association can do for you, because there's power in numbers. That's where we learn. That's where we can make petitions for political change and regulatory change, and we can learn from each other. So that's what I'm doing.
And if we're lucky, maybe we can get Ziggy up in here on a Wednesday sometime to talk to us more about it. It'd be great, huh?
Yeah, we'll make that happen.
Ziggy's like, what? All right, hey, last thing is, let's see, we go to yourdotguide.com, click on the podcast. Brian, what's going on now? What are you doing?
Oh, I have an episode that went up last 2 weeks ago on buying and selling businesses, how value is determined on your business, what you can do to prepare your business to sell, because we were talking earlier, consolidation is happening, and it may be in your best interest to sell your company to a competitor and walk away or merge operations with them. Maybe you are in the place where you're looking, you can't get drivers, you can't buy equipment right now. So you buy somebody out. We used to buy them out for their brick and for their routes and their customers. Now we're buying them out more for their assets, their property, because it's hard to get approved to have a trucking terminal, and their equipment and access to their drivers. So I got a great episode where I interviewed George Meadows. He is a business broker and a consultant, Business by George. businessbrokergeorge.com, and he'll be down here in Florida too as well, but he specializes in buying and selling towing companies, auto recycling companies, and trucking companies. So think about it. Maybe you have something to offer you can capitalize on by buying or selling your company. So I'm doing that on the podcast. I forget what this week's episode was that just went up, and I'm looking for a special guest for the next coming episodes, and I would love to interview a fleet owner or two to speak from that perspective, because it means more when it comes out of somebody's mouth other than mine. I can talk all day long, but the guys that are out there doing it and owning the companies, they're the ones we want to hear from. So that's what I'm doing on the road with your DOT guy, Brian Riker, available wherever you can get podcasts.
Awesome, man. Wow. That went so fast. That was a great show, man. That was all. We didn't get to any of the normal stuff, which is just totally fine. I thought that was an incredible conversation. It was much like, it was like an interview. I just interviewed you about equipment and the business live from the, where are you? Florida.
I am in Florida, Orlando, Florida.
Awesome.
Disney Springs Resort, Lake Buena Vista.
Lake Buena Vista. All right, cool. Well, listen, Brian, I know you got to go. I know you're busy, so I'm going to let you go. I'm sorry that I didn't read anything in the live chat. I just wanted to keep the train a rolling. Feel free to contact Brian or put it in the YouTube comments. I'll tap him on the shoulder and make sure he gets to any questions you have. But I think we covered most of it. Brian, thank you so much for your time today. I really do appreciate it.
You're welcome, Jay. And sorry, guys, I didn't get to answer your questions live. I will try to answer anything you leave in the notes in the next couple of days. And see you next Wednesday.
All right,
sounds
pretty good.
Back at our normal time, noon central, right?
Right, back at the normal time.
Sounds good.
Thanks, Brian. You take care, buddy.
Bye.
All right, see ya. And I'll let Brian go and just wrap this up. Everybody, I want to thank you. Number one, I'm sorry that we started a little early, but it doesn't seem to have affected anything. So, because you get the notification, right? No matter what time something is scheduled, nobody's got this on their calendar. You get that live notification, oh, they're live, and it pops up on your device, and you jump in, and you comment, and, I thank you guys. I know you're busy, and I know half of this stuff you already know, or whatever that is, but I appreciate the input, jumping in, saying hello. It means a lot, and, you know, hopefully, here, I will say this, I watched a video earlier. I know I bag on, there's two groups I bag on, the Get Rich Quick YouTubers and the Facebook Super Truckers. And I do that because, dude, things have changed. Like, stop. I mean, just stop. You can keep doing whatever you're doing, but don't get other people thinking, well, here's what's interesting. The Facebook Super Truckers bag on the Get Rich Quick YouTubers, and the Get Rich Quick YouTubers don't even know about the Facebook Super Truckers. It's pretty funny. And what I really don't understand is the Get Rich Quick YouTubers that have folks in their comments that know better, but seem to get on the ride and go ahead and take a spin. I don't understand it. But I saw a Get Rich Quick YouTuber earlier finally complaining about the stuff that we already all talk about. And goes against the get-rich-quick tuberness. So I suppose in a year we're going to see the trailer for sale, and then, you know, then it goes, I don't know if a trailer needs, it's like a suitcase with stickers of all the country you've been to. Trailers need stickers of all the previous owners on the side of the trailer. But I know, I'm just a guy sitting at a desk. What do I know? Thank you guys so much. Really do appreciate it. Hey, what's up, Ronald? Thanks for saying hello. Let us know how we can help. Here's the good news. Regardless of my yapping, you can email Brian the email onair@yourdotguy.com. Above everything else, if you need a piece of advice, if you got a question, you just left the scale and you're sweating bullets, email Brian Riker onair@yourdotguy.com. He really does want to help. That's the whole point of the show. DOT compliance, here to help. And then some, I sprinkle in some stuff. All right, guys, join us tomorrow. Tomorrow is Dispatching Live, 90 minutes of load board fun. I got to say, I think we're accomplishing something on that show, too. Again, the views, ignore the views. The views do not represent the progress we're making between the trade shows we go to and the businesses now contacting us behind the scenes. Man, I'm not going to share all the secrets because I want these businesses to keep on watching, contacting us, and there it is, keep on yapping. But there's cool stuff happening behind the scenes, and we're really trying to keep everything above board and help raise the conversation and the information. So please help us do that. Thank you so much for watching ATI Auto Transport. I'm out of here. I'll see you soon. Thank you so much. Peace out, everybody.